All set.
So I've heard you talk about exhaustion, specifically talking about adrenal glands and how we need to make sure that doing more is the right thing and not doing some type of more rest. And I wondered if you could talk about that. So I just finished my first 12-week module, and I've heard you say, like, after you work out, you shouldn't feel like you want to lie down and take a nap. You should feel better. You should feel more energy. And I don't necessarily feel like I have to take a nap right when I'm done, but later in the day, I really do. I am hypothyroid. I have during the course of the 12 weeks, I was totally consistent with the lifting, and I'm just so thrilled about that. And I started to walk. I've gotten it to almost every day, figuring out the timing still. I haven't added anything else in yet, but exhaustion is just a real. Yesterday, I had to take a 2-hour nap. The day before that, I had to take a 2-hour nap. And I don't know if that's what you mean by exhaustion. I don't know how to, I'm always exhausted, so I'm not sure if that's the exhaustion you're talking about, or if I just don't know.
Well, so yes, I mean, that certainly qualifies. So, my question would be, is the exercise making it worse? Where were you before you started compared to now, having gone through a 12-week program?
I don't think the exercise is making it worse. I still I've been working on, so I added taking magnesium, and I feel like that is helping me get more sleep because sleep is a huge factor. So I do feel like that has gotten somewhat better, but it's so rare for me to have 8 hours of sleep. And I do basically drag through my day because of that, I think. So I don't feel like the exercise is making it worse. The other thing is that now I'm here in Chicago, and although the allergy season basically for me started March 1st, it has been so cold here until just recently. And now that it's gotten suddenly warm and the allergy symptoms are just so, I always feel like the allergy, I don't know why they never mention exhaustion as a part of allergy symptoms, because it's a real thing, I think. I need more sleep when the allergies are bad. And I have more trouble sleeping through a night when the allergies are bad.
And
So
yeah, okay. Let me talk for a little bit, and then I'm going to come back to you because I'm probably going to want to ask some more questions. And this is thank you for doing this, right? So being in the hot seat like this, because there are a lot of women, I think, who are dealing with the same thing and wondering where do I push or should I or what is that like? So number one, the answer to that question, it's not worse. That's a sign, okay, and I'm okay with that, not necessarily stepping back. However, I also heard you not say in so many words, it's not better, right? It's just not worse. Okay. So I just want to make sure I'm on the same page with that. So, in your case, and based on the second thing you said, so I want to tell you about this, and first of all, want to put this out there, and I don't want to pull the wool over anybody's eyes, especially my own. I'm not a physician, and I'm certainly not anybody here's physician. And so I'm not trying to diagnose and treat, but talking as a functional coach and potentially giving you information to do more research or ask more questions of your physician or simply of yourself, and I think tap into your own wisdom as well. But what we know now about allergens and allergy season, and for a lot of women in midlife, and please just raise your hand or put a thumbs up or something in the chat if this was also you. didn't really have allergies or notice them until they got to midlife. And then all of a sudden, you know, a certain season, you were more bothered than others. Let me know if this rings a bell with anybody else. So often what happens is as we go through midlife, we've got so much more going on with hormonal changes that maybe we were dealing with low thyroid even earlier in our life, but that load then with hormonal changes, we don't clear our own toxins out as well because we've got kind of a cumulative effect of our toxins over a lifetime. And we've got so much else going on. Our bodies are trying to juggle with hormonal changes going like this. And we're like, wait, I'm on this ride. Let me buckle my seatbelt. And we're not dealing with it. And so having seasonal allergies often is just a sign or confirmation your body was already dealing with a load and it can't handle it. It can't handle that one more flowering tree that your neighbor has. It can't deal with it very well. So overall, this might be a reason to look at how are you supporting yourself or your pathways for natural detox? And I don't know, this is serendipity sometimes when this happens, but I was actually looking at glutathione today. And it was something that I went on when I was under the influence, quote unquote, of mold. So I was exposed in my house, then I was living with it while they mitigated it, but also hit menopause that year, going through a lot of stressors physically and then emotionally having to move. But all of that said, okay, probably needed glutathione immediately. I have the benefit of, and hopefully you all feel you have the benefit of me being in a room full of 80 people regularly, 75 of whom are functional doctors. And I am the token fitness expert who works with women in menopause. So I have the benefit of sitting at dinner with people and finding out their recommendations. But we may need, maybe it's not glutathione, it may be something else, but it also might be looking at if you know you don't tolerate dairy or gluten or wheat or do better off of them, and it's hard for you to be disciplined during this season, now you have an excuse to be a little more disciplined or a motivator to be a bit more disciplined because you have less bandwidth. Because you've got this other thing kind of tapping on your shoulder. And if you reduce things firing at you from other places, you may find I have fewer allergy symptoms because I know for myself, I was swimming in chlorinated water my entire life. When I hit midlife, swimming in chlorinated water made me sneeze 100 times every night. Couldn't wait to go to bed. And I could barely get through a college course class teaching because I needed a Kleenex hanging out of my nose. Practically, it was that bad. So just knowing this whole, what else am I dealing with? Just being in midlife could be it. Dealing with low thyroid, you know, also your body's handling that. If there are other emotional stressors, the allergens are kind of just reinforcing all that's going on, saying you need a little support. So I just want to, for everybody else here, if you deal with that and you have seasonal allergies, it's a different way to frame and think about it and what might help you get through it. So back to you. So knowing that sleep is not great. My first, if I were working with you and we were looking at all the things that we might fix, the top pillar would be for me, let's find every way that we can to support your sleep. And the exercise actually may be secondary, but we're going to make the exercise choice so that your sleep benefits. We're going to make nutritional choices so that your sleep will benefit. We might want to look at what you're doing with supplements so that your sleep benefits. And the magnesium is one. if you're getting better sleep, but it's still maybe not optimal, do you have a room to increase the magnesium, or have you already tried that? That would be a question I'd ask of you. But right now, in terms of doing more, my answer would be no. I would focus when you're not getting sleep. I would change from trying to get outside and go for a walk and look at 45 or an hour. I would look at 10 minutes or 15 minutes periodically throughout the day. If you can do that, would potentially be better to support your blood sugar stabilization, because we know with poor sleep, your blood sugar stabilization is not great. It's up and down, and it's kind of a hangover from the no sleep. So short walks, but periodically during the day, may be far more beneficial for you than one long walk, if your day allows for that to happen. So I'm going to pause, Amy, and let you ask or comment, please.
So I never had allergies until the year I turned 50, and then it hit me like a ton of bricks, and I couldn't even figure out what was going on. It felt lit like a physical attack on me. So that's been 9 years now, and they're just awful. Yes, I hear what you're saying about the blood sugar stabilization,
Okay.
and one thing that I've heard a lot is, walk after every meal if you can.
Yep.
So what I've been doing, because the walk of 30 to 45, which is what I've been doing, I think that is helping me sleep
Okay.
better.
Okay.
So I'm trying to do that. When I take that longer walk, the route is that then I'm going up a hill at the end. And I always feel like, okay, this is really good because the rest of it was, there was some downhill, kind of flat through the nature center, and then up a hill. I do have a rebounder, and I try to go on that after one, at least one meal a day. I can figure that out usually. And I know that's helpful with the blood sugar too. What else should did you say that I should answer?
So how
Oh
about,
yeah, I did increase magnesium.
okay,
You
good.
said that.
Okay.
I had been taking some magnesium, and then I think I listened to you talking about fish oil and omegas, and you were talking about when you lived in Colorado and you increased that. And then I thought, well, I could increase mine too. And then I could also increase the magnesium. And I think that magnesium is making a difference in my sleep quality.
It should. It's so related to, number one, if you take it with dinner, which is my preference, and some will say take it right before bed. And by the way, if you're taking it right before bed and it's working, don't fix it if it's not broken. And if that's when you remember, okay. But I like the idea of taking it with dinner. It absorbs better with food. And then it's in your system in that next 2 to 3 hours as you're kind of unwinding between dinner and bedtime. It helps to relax and calm, and that prepares you to get to sleep. But the goal is it's actually most helpful in helping you stay asleep. So if you find you're still maybe waking in the nighttime, as long as you're getting back to sleep, that's great. But if you're still waking, I would consider bumping it up a little bit more. See if there is that just little edge of this is helping me a little bit more. The, upper level that my friends are willing to admit that they take is probably between 1200 and 1500 milligrams, which is far greater than the RDA. But we are kind of victims of our own. How deep is the hole we've gotten into? How insufficient are we? And if we were just taking the RDA, we're assuming that's all we need, but we're forgetting we have a hole to fill up, and we may need more for a period of time. So I wouldn't be afraid of that. The other thing I would look at is And I like the confirmation from you that that longer walk is potentially helping you get to sleep, which is great feedback, right? And yet keep the intermittent movement after meals during your day if you can for the blood sugar control, because that one long walk will be less helpful than those things are. So kind of getting them all and paying attention to, is this too much, or am I tipping the bucket more toward fatigue during the day? How is your protein intake? How are you doing there?
I have been working on that, and I know that I'm not where I should be yet. And I'm still using like whey as one of the protein sources, probably almost every day. I use eggs, egg whites, cottage cheese, plain Greek yogurt, a lot of chicken breast, and some fish as my main proteins, and I probably have beef one time a week is my guess.
What if dairy and eggs were sources of allergens for you and you didn't know it?
I don't think so, because when I started with a functional medicine doctor, we did like a whole elimination thing for quite a while, and because he had suspected dairy specifically. But when we did a whole, I don't remember what the diet he called, but I had n there was like no vinegar, no yeast, like it was very limiting in what I could eat. And I did go through when you get those flu symptoms, what do you call that? Like your body is,
Detoxing.
yeah. And it was like I had, it was like I was quite ill for a while. And he said, no, I don't see any, he didn't think there was any reason to think that dairy was an issue. He had thought that because he had asked me questions like way back into my history, like when you were pregnant, what did you crave? And I always craved milk. And he said, very often we crave things that we actually can't handle. So that's why he had suspected dairy. But
Interesting.
then he didn't feel. And now I, that was that, that's been quite a few years. Like I don't drink milk anymore. So the dairies that I said, the cottage cheese and the yogurt is, well, I do fermented foods. I make fermented foods and I do milk kefir and kimchi. I sometimes do Al-Rutari yogurt. I do other vegetables, kombucha. So I try to get a lot of fermented foods to help, my gut, whole gut biome. So I don't think that I have any food allergies. At least that's what we thought when we did that whole thing.
Yeah, and it sounds like you've gone through the whole thing. And just for anybody else, we're really talking about food sensitivities, not necessarily an allergy. And I think, Amy, that's what you meant too. I just wanted to, for anybody else, we're not talking about something where your tongue and your ears close up or shut down, but something that unfortunately flies under the radar and makes it more difficult to detect. And there's two ways to find that. One, physically doing the removal from your diet, and then the reintroductory is where you're really testing, is this a problem or isn't it? And there's also the lab test, and one may discover something the other won't. And so the benefit is do both if you are unsure. The other thing that comes to my mind, and again, I'm just playing detective here, but if you're working with a functional doctor, this might something to ask, but any issues, or has the conversation come up about histamine?
No, I don't have that doctor anymore. I don't, so I don't, yeah, what would you be thinking about that?
Well, I mean, obviously during like pollen season and allergens, that is a histamine trigger, but certain foods that we eat also trigger histamine. And they are foods that are healthy, quote unquote, like the ferments, could actually be culprits. So while they serve one benefit of supporting your gut in certain conditions, for some of us who are sensitive to histamines or might have a histamine reaction, it can actually go the opposite direction. So I'm going to pose that to you and ask you to do a little bit more homework on it. We haven't done anything on that. And again, it's kind of getting deeper into nutrition and gut health than I want to pretend I'm an expert on, but it's something I could have somebody come in and talk about. But I would say, and I've looked at histamine for my own purposes, just for migraines, headaches. So for any of you who suffer, you know, that's something to look at as well. But again, it's like, what is that layer of, you know, there's just too much. And then all of a sudden during allergy season, when other people are exposed as well, it means we've got a load that your body just isn't able to handle. So we've got to start unpacking where might it be coming from that in it masquerades, and this is the biggest challenge, as something healthy. You know, that for anybody else or for you at a different moment in time might have been healthy, but right now it's not working for you. And case in point, you know, for many of you, dairy, you know, is something that you're maybe not tolerating it as well now, but it's very difficult to detect. So number one with you, Amy, would be keep coming back, you know, just even on a daily basis or at least several times a week to the scoring on the wellness check with 0 to 4. You know, how's my energy? How is my, you know, is it stable during the day? How's my sleep? How's my digestion? How's my elimination? How's my focus? How are all of those things collectively? And I would look at, is there, you know, one habit I want to change and test it to keep coming back to things that would change before potentially, and you haven't mentioned, you know, weight or body composition necessarily, but in your case, I would say it's, we're looking for, if I change this, is my sleep improve? Because if your sleep improves, you know, your day-to-day energy obviously is going to be better.
Okay.
Was that helpful? I know it wasn't conclusive, but hopefully it was helpful.
It was very helpful. Thank you so much. I hope that was helpful to other people too.
Yeah, thank you for sharing. Okay. Scroll up here. Amber said, I saw an advertisement for a vibration plate today that costs $200. How do we know what is best? Huge difference in cost. Actually, it's true. I spoke with a private client today who had one that I want to say was $89 on Amazon. And I was trying to help her determine the settings. So she wants to use it for bone density and needs to. But I said, do you know what's the hertz range that the plate has? And do you know how to set it so that you're at between 20 and 30, sweet spot being 25 for most of the studies on bone density? And she didn't know that. We're looking at the manual, and I don't know why they hide this. They make this really hard to find. This should be the forefront and the obvious thing, because we're all so conscious of bone density. And for many, it's one of the top reasons we're buying it. So we need to know the setting. I could not find it, but that is really what you need to ask, Amber, is why do I want it? And which benefit means the most to me? So if it's bone density, or it's the ability to exercise when I'm limited by a joint or arthritis or pain or something else, some more muscle stimulation contraction. Is it for weight loss or support or lymphatic drainage? And it can do all of those. And there are some who have a wide bandwidth. So you could use higher, and that would be for weight loss. You could use lower, which is actually bone density is on the somewhat lower end of the spectrum. And you could get one that encompasses all, but you need to know, how do I turn that up? So if you are in VIP, there's the masterclass I gave, and Amber, I think you may have told me your essentials right now. So in the masterclass archives, there is a whole body vibration plate course and or masterclass and a extensive PDF that gives you a chart about access and what they do, each one of the studies related to each one of the benefits and where you want to be and what kind of results they got. So I gave you the one, lymph drainage, what I'm looking for. Okay. So somewhat a little bit higher, so not at the very highest. So what I would do is make sure you're asking what's the Hertz level when you're reading it. So where does it start and what's the highest? What's the range? And is it obvious so that you can program it so that it's right there? So I would reach out. Sometimes when you're on Amazon looking at something, it'll say go to the brand store, and that would be where I'd start. And you'll get a good feel for what's the customer service from them when you get it anyway. You've got some control with Amazon in that you can return it, but Amazon isn't going to be able to give you the customer service on the exact product. So hopefully there's a, when you get it, a way to register it and a way to get some support behind the scenes, but I would ask those questions before you get it. So hopefully that's helpful. Stephanie said, can you give me some guidance on stopping the sucking in the abs when working out? It's a long habit. I started Stronger One today and I talk about that. You talk about that. You meaning me. Well, I don't know how to break your habit of that so much as I'll give you some motivation. So the reason most of us do that is because we somehow feel more spelt. But we also, I think, are under the belief that you're making your core stronger, while in fact, you're weakening what the core is supposed to do, which is stabilize. So if you are sucking in your core, you're distracting it from doing the bracing that is the lower back's personal girdle. So imagine going into the weight room where the big boys are doing all the things. And most of them, if they're lifting really heavy, will put on a big thick leather weight belt to protect their lower back. I've always hated that idea because it actually encourages them to push out against it and not to actually brace. They're just depending on something. And I've always thought they're probably doing something they shouldn't be doing if they need to wear that thing for support. But I digress. So what we want our core to do is to brace. And if you put your hand just on your belly, just anywhere, just splay your fingers so you're across it. And if you cough, force yourself to cough, you should have felt just a little kick in of your belly naturally braces when you do that. Now, if you were going to sneeze like a big, right? Again, you have that kind of thing. You've all experienced this when you have a bad cough. At some point, after a few days of that, you're actually sore from coughing so much, right? Not just your throat, but you're actually sore in the core because some of the diaphragm muscles that are helping to force that out are giving over exercise, and your vastus muscle, your transverse abdominis that goes around like a belt. We don't talk about that one very much. We talk about the rectus abdominis and the obliques on the inner and outer sides, but we don't talk so much about the transversus. And that is the one that we can control. So if I'm sitting here right now contracting my TVA, I'm still able to talk. So I'm not really sucking in, but I am bracing that muscle. And then I can let go of it again and just kind of let it all hang out. But you should not be detecting that I'm doing it or not doing it. You shouldn't know the difference. But that TVA and turning it on is really kind of the bracing that we're after and we want. We won't get lower back support if we're sucking the core in. It's going this way and it's taking energy from elsewhere. And the other thing that's really hard to do, if you're sucking in your core, it's hard not to tense a little bit up here in reaction to it. So upper back and neck tense a little bit. So everything, when you hold your breath, we tend to tense. When we hold a muscle and isometrically contract it, we tend to tense somewhere else. So it's not really great for the chain reaction throughout the skeleton that occurs with it. So I don't know if that helps you break the habit, but one of the best ways to not do it is to teach your health self how to breathe again when you're exercising. So you're breathing in and you're filling that lungs, the lower lobes of your lungs. So there's going to be expansion there. And when you exhale through a straw, and you're keeping it all going, all out, 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 breathing in that way when you're exercising. And I'm just getting you to overdo it. Keep going, keep blowing out the straw until you almost cough and cough and cough. And you feel the muscles tighten up down there. And it actually feels, wow, I have a waistline again, right? But you're getting all that air out and you're feeling that because your diaphragm is emptying and it's forcing the air up and out. If you can get that feel, that's actually supporting you breathing out and getting the air somewhere so that that stuck air, we call that bracing, that's negative. When you're holding your breath, the Valsalva maneuver, it's always been there. The risk has been don't do that because you'll pass out. No one has really ever passed out from doing that, I don't think, in 42 years. I've never seen it. But what will happen in midlife more than not is that air pressure has to go somewhere. And if you have pelvic floor weakness, that's where it goes. And so we're causing more force to our pelvic floor unknowingly. There are people who, once you've crossed over, if you have a pelvic floor problem, you have whether it's incontinence or you have prolapse of some type, they can't lift heavy or it takes a while to go through rehab and get back. But the number one thing that they do is breathe. They have to learn how to breathe. And many of us hold our breath when we're doing something hard. And it's okay to take a breath in while you're, say, going down if you're doing a squat. So you're going with gravity. Inhale there, but exhale when you forcefully push those heels into the floor to come up and stand and you're resisting gravity. We want to breathe out because that air needs to come here as opposed to go down where we don't want it to. And it's hard to suck in and do proper breath. So the risk of potentially sucking in is number one, you don't have the support for the lower back that you need. But two, you may be making it counterintuitive and your pelvic floor is put at greater risk for no reason, is except that we need to retrain that. So probably a lot of reminding, a lot of cues, but now that you've picked up on it, even that should help. Lori says, hope you're feeling better. My question is, I finished. Yeah, it was a rough weekend. Thank you. Finished stronger three, and I really need some help deciding which one to do next. I read the description for each, but unsure which to do. I got through the 12 weeks, no problem. I'm in perimenopause, found out I have osteopenia. Suggestions. So, Lori, do you want to unmute if you're able?
Yeah. Hi, sure.
Hey, so, okay, you're in perimenopause. So we know we want you to work on muscle because that's the muscle loss that can occur, doesn't have to, as long as we're focused on it. And we also know energy level might be a little bit up and down. How is yours? How's your energy level? How's your sleep?
My sleep is terrible, and I got so bad that I'm actually taking Zolpidem every night to sleep. That's the only thing that helps me sleep. But I'm going to break off of that and do CBTI. But it got that bad where I was just basically up howling at the moon like around 3 to like 5 a.m. And I also found out, just so you kind of have a better understanding, recently got
lab work done, and I'm anemic and IDA and she was checking like all the hormones, all that good stuff. And I'm trying to think what else that was kind of a shock. I did the sleep study, but I'm waiting on those results. But as far as like, I've always been athletic my whole life and not a problem like working out, but I never really did strength training. That's why I started with the week three or stronger three, sorry. And now I'm just like, what should I do? And I went back to three and did three again. But now I'm like looking for something else.
Okay, great. So tell me how you felt afterward in terms of energy level. On the days you worked out, your energy was good, no worse. Was it better?
Yeah, I mean, it was fine. I didn't really notice that it like skyrocketed or anything, or on the converse, it didn't also make me very tired. So it was just, I felt proud of myself that I did the workout.
Okay, nice. So you got a couple of options. So I'll throw both out at you. And one is, so the program you did was between 40, 45 minutes. I like to say each of those workouts is average about 45 minutes in Stronger 3. So if we tried to stay similarly, we could either go down and go a little shorter, and Stronger 7 might be okay for you. So it's 30, 35 minutes on average, keeping it short, probably a little bit more intense, or you could go up and do something that would be a little bit longer. Some of the workouts are going to be closer to an hour, but you could do the work along workouts with either Stronger 10 or Stronger 4. And Stronger 4 will make you think a little bit more. So you'll do the first week is more endurance based. It will feel a little more like Stronger 3. And your week 2 and your week 3 are going to focus a little bit more on pure strength and a little bit more on hypertrophy. So there'll be a change in focus. So the muscles will get a little bit of a surprise. And then the fourth week is always a recovery week. So it's a little bit shorter, a little bit lighter, so that you're ready for that second month again. So lots of variety in Stronger 4. And Stronger 10, I just did all the total body workouts. So you can do that one two ways, where you just use demo videos where you are going through the program, but getting a reminder of, okay, it's that, this is the exercise. But if you'd prefer to just push play and do it with me, I just recorded all those total body workouts, and you could go through that and do each of those twice during a week. And that's a great place to start as well. So a lot of those repetition ranges are between 12 and 15. There's not too much higher than that.
Okay. So either 4 or 10, twice a week.
Yep.
Okay. Because I am tempted to do like a third day.
Don't even do that. So here's what I want you to think if you're tempted to do a third day. Before you do that, for the benefit of getting a complementary movement, still stimulating the muscle growth, but slightly differently. So we're not going to reach fatigue, and this wouldn't be the number one thing I'd say, do this instead of weight training. But as a complement, a flowing yoga session can be a great way to stimulate muscles without impeding. It's not going to get in the way of your recovery from Monday, for instance, or the workout that you're going to do on Friday, but yet you're doing a lot of unilateral work on one leg, the other leg. You get rotation, lateral flexion that you don't in a linear workout. So that said, you know, think about Monday and Friday are your two weight training days, or move those around. But, and then Wednesday being your yoga, doing a flowing session. So you're transferring weight, you're still taxing the muscles, but not in a way that might beat you up. And that also might be really good for sleep.
I'm a yoga teacher too, so I love you here. I love you. Thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome. Thanks for coming up. Amy says, yes, never had allergies until the year I turned 50. Okay. So Jerry said, wondering about my next program. I like the format of stronger 8 and 10, but this summer I'll be interested in 30 minute without my summer job. It's pretty physical and or a workout. For my summer job, pretty physical. Think long workouts would not work well. I don't think you tell me to stop my workouts during the summer, but I don't get too much rest and recovery much from my job. And that's why I think a shorter strength training program is better. So can I do stronger 8 or 10, but just condense it with less sets rather than a 7? Last time I tried 7, I didn't have access to a gym and the video didn't work for me with 7 because even though it's short, transition from exercise to exercise too quick. Yeah, for sure, for a gym. When I tried pausing or rewinding, video didn't work. Spent more time doing that than actually working out. Yeah, for sure. I totally understand. It's really not conducive to gym workouts to do the push play unless you're got a little place in a studio all by yourself. I'm listening for your answer, but will be temporarily away from my phone should you need to ask me to clarify anything. Okay, no worries. So, could you do stronger 10 and stronger 8 and condense it? Yes. So, remember with any program that I hand to you for, and this goes across the board, all the strongers, all the both lifted, the core work is always early. The most important work is always early, so that if you need to do just that, you can, and then you wouldn't do the rest. That might mean every workout is slightly different. That might mean there's a tri-set, meaning there's first three exercises done 3 times, and then you'll move on and do something else. You're really short on time. That might be your workout that day. And so it's a 10 or 15 minute, not counting your warm up and cool down. And there is maybe you would do the next one. So you use a tri-set and then there's a superset right after that. And maybe you have that much time and then you stop. That kind of stimulus, especially when in Jerry's situation, you have a very physical job. You're not sitting on the couch eating bonbons, right? So you have to remember, I want to save the strength I've got now. I actually want to use it because I'm putting it somewhere else, but I want to maintain the strength and the muscle mass that I've got and just stay tuned up. That works. That's all you need. So, and I want you to keep in mind that that is the smartest way to go. You don't have to do all the things and have, a really busy summer or other season for you doing something else and still keep that, trying to build. And it's probably wonderful for your mind as well as your body to have these seasonal changes of, this is a lighter weight workout and it light may be in the length of it, not necessarily the intensity of it. You might do an intense, powerful workout, but when you do that, what happens with interval training, right? The intensity goes up, the time goes way down, it's inverse. And the same could be true for your strength training. Make it intense, make it count, and make it over. That's it. So I hope that was helpful. And Jerry, I think you talked yourself through that answer actually very well without me. I just contributed a little bit at the end. Tony says, after hearing you state on Saturday that meat is the best protein you can eat, I asked you this question. I realized I wasn't as clear as I would have liked it to be. I have been taking Perfect Amino tablets, which are vegan dietary protein supplement. A statement on the container says it is the true science of protein. I had been taking these tablets and eating an Aloha bar after a strength workout for protein. Do you think this is sufficient? So if we're comparing it to a continuum, is it better than nothing and better than no protein? Absolutely. Is it better than having real food with other micronutrients in it? No, right? Because real food, real whole food is always going to win. So that's kind of where it sits. So you need to look at, does this fit into my lifestyle better, more optimally? And ultimately, I think the way we each would answer this question would be, what are my results? Is it getting me re the results that I want? After starting that, from before starting it to doing it for a regular period of time, am I getting better results than I was? Or do you want to test something else? I think that's kind of how I would answer that. So, love that you added videos to Stronger 10. Yes, the full length total body. Lori said, yes, I just started Stronger 10 today. Love having the full videos. Awesome. So now, right, we're prepping to get on to the next program. Janet said, about a week ago, I completed a 3-day hike at high altitude. I did well, but I was really exhausted for about 1 to 2 days after. Also traveled 30 hours on planes, coming back about 4 days after the hike. Did a 13-mile bike ride yesterday, really wiped me out. Should I primarily be just walking? And when should I restart my stronger workouts? Good question. So, first of all, congrats. And, I would look at that in the same way as it's a marathon, right? So, here's a rule of thumb. And this is old school because I have not done a marathon for a long time. And somebody come over here and shoot me if I ever talk about doing one again. But, the rule of thumb was for every mile that you ran or every hour that it took you, there's a rule of, okay, take that many days off. So you're going to do 26.2 miles. You're going to take 26 days to recover. It doesn't mean don't do anything, but it means take it lighter because the damage might be greater. So, in terms of damage, for hiking, physically, your physiology and your muscles may have been in pretty great shape and ready for that. But the other physiology was your mitochondria really had to overwork, right? And your oxygen carrying capacity was somewhat limited. So all those working muscles weren't getting the same oxygen that they were used to when you're at sea level or what's normal for you. So the workload was much harder. So hence the, coming back and being a little bit more post-exhausted. And there's a little bit of the after Christmas letdown, I'm sure, because sounds like it was a great adventure. And so let that sit with you a little while too. But I would just pay attention to there being less a rhyme and reason about, exactly wait 2 weeks or 3 weeks or whatever that might be, and listen to how are you feeling. And just know there was probably because there wasn't, you weren't doing high impact and jumping. So there wasn't probably much muscular damage in of that type, the micro tearing that will occur, although it was a strenuous hike, you would have probably had some. And it's more the repair otherwise. So people do complain of, kind of altitude illness generally while they're there, but sounds like you did fairly well doing it. But flying is no joke. That was, traveling 30 hours on trains, probably some dehydration there, even if you were drinking to hydrate, just in dry planes, airports, and, if any hotels were involved as well, that was probably a factor. So I would continue just to be really good to yourself. Eat a little bit more protein than normal, maybe a little bit more carbohydrate to keep replenishing. And Amy, I didn't say that with you and probably should. So anybody who's dealing with adrenal fatigue and, I think one of our first things we go to is cutting back on carbohydrates, but make sure you're fueling yourself to nurture. And when you have thyroid issue, you generally have adrenal stress. It's just kind of a given. So nurture yourself with high quality carbohydrates as well. But as you recover, Janet, I would encourage, eating a little bit more high carb, than you're used to, potentially just to replenish and allow yourself that little extra time, but listen to your energy level. So, give yourself maybe a week of easy. Start back with, after all the hiking and all the sitting on planes, start back with some flowing yoga and stimulate the muscles again. See how you feel after a good, 40, 45 minute session of flowing yoga. So you're stimulating the muscles in that way. You're also putting some rotation, lateral flexion back into your body, which is probably going to feel really good or needed. And then when that's feeling good, then I would say move on to doing strength training to complement it. So hopefully that was helpful for you. Okay, I think I hit everybody's question. So if you have one, I'm going to scroll back up and make sure I didn't miss anything, but could you please let me know if you've got one question? I will take it before we get by. And just for those of you who are VIP, this, okay, good. This past weekend, so we do your masterclass on the second Wednesday of every month. And there is also a public masterclass that I will do afterward. Generally, that's content that if you're in the VIP masterclass, you're already getting something deeper on a deeper level than that regularly. You're more than welcome to attend. But in that, I offered a workshop that will be held on Saturday, the 25th. Very similar to the retreat that we did, kind of going over moves and how to and proper technique. That is not a free session. That's a, I think it's a $99 session. It's for VIPs. You will have the replay. You're not granted access to come to it simply because the Q&As from the paid members will be very different than yours. Most likely, they'll be people who are newer to exercise and need to ask questions specific to that newness about, being nervous about getting hurt. But we will put that replay into the members area for VIPs. So realize that if that changes your mind or makes you wonder, or you were thinking, should we come or do we get to come? So you won't be invited. However, you will get the replay. So want everybody to know that. Okay, I think no more questions coming in. So I think we're good for today. Let me know, will the replay of the Saturday retreat be in the app soon? It's in there. So Lori, it is already in there, and you'll see partially the reason why I'm also putting this replay of the upcoming one in. But it's in there, and last week's protein masterclass is up as well. So I think just everything is really caught up right now. So I think we're good to go. You're welcome. Where's the replay? CA, which replay? So the virtual retreat replay is in the virtual retreat category in the app, and the replay of the protein masterclass is in the master classes in the app. So I think I hit you both. Let me know if there's still a question. Think we're good. Okay. Yes, on the app. We no longer put anything elsewhere. The members area at cafe.flippingfifty is closing completely. So we are going to start rerouting you. So if you're coming over to do your stronger programs, you're going to hit a link that'll send you to the app so that you all come over because we're closing those doors completely by May 1st, if not before. Okay. All right, everybody. Thanks so much for being here. And thank you for coming up, asking questions. Have a great rest of your night.